Mike Shuka. Mike's been with us for, what, 3 years now? Something like that? A good long time. He's a retired teacher, natural philosopher, lover of family, books, the outdoors, travel, and life. He hopes to have some promise as a generator of small literary gems. He pursues this hope with passion and enthusiasm, and Mike says he would settle for winning the lottery and buying a laptop so he can write wherever and whenever he wants. And I'll ask you guys to start coming up here when I introduce you so we can keep moving along here. Mike.
Well, I rehearsed one piece and it took up the entire 5 minutes, so I decided to settle on a couple of other smaller things. Incidentally, we don't talk about sex very often, but at our age, it's always funny. This is a piece that I just recently wrote on poetry. My favorite author is Edith Wharton, and when I first read a story of hers, I was just astonished at the eloquence of her sentences, just the structure and the grace of her lines grabbed me immediately. And so that's always been kind of something in the back of my mind, that I would like to create sentences like that. So I try, and every time I create a sentence that comes close to that, Dick tells me, "You should write poetry." Well, I resisted for a long time, but lately I've been thinking about poetry. The problem is that I accidentally wrote a poem that people liked. And I guess maybe I have in the back of my mind, if I stay away from poetry, I'll never have to prove that it was a fluke. But anyway, here are some thoughts on poetry. Poetry by design is spare. The most skilled poets, arguably, are the most spare. This is not to be confused with brief. One can, of course, be both, as in haiku or Ogden Nash's tangential reference to male conquest, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. These examples represent not just the meat close to the bone, they are bone. However brief a poem, the words that comprise it, like the bones of a skeleton, are carefully and particularly articulated. The magic of poetry, however, is in the reading. When the reader is led to envision not just the individual bones, not only the whole of the skeleton, but an entire living, breathing organism in all its vital glory. Reread a favorite poem. Does it not stir emotion-laden imagery? If it did not, the words would be no more than dry, dead dust. The poet's job is to offer not mere motes of dust, but lusty, fertile, verbal soil by the bucket. Not just by the bucket, but by the cubic yard, the ton, enough to create a lush garden of the imagination. A poem is only a success if it engages the reader's mind and emotions, allowing whole landscapes, emotional upwellings, tranquil refuges that exist only in the mind of the reader. The poet's quandary, then, while in the throes of creation, must always be what and how many words are required to achieve maximum effect. That the most exigent words must be used goes without saying. Every writer selects his tools carefully. The real meat of the problem is this: how many words will be too many or too few or just right? The reader has the final judgment. The art of the poet consists of accurately, judging the mind of the reader when choosing which and how many words to use to convey exactly what is wished with exactly the effect desired. Only the right words in the correct quantity will do. Well, my literary gem, the only one I've ever created, it's called Look Up. 19 strong, but weary of classes and city sick, Weekend, Wisconsin, home to the Northern Highlands, park at the landing, shotgun in hand, up the slope to the Popple Ridge. Glorious autumn day, gusts creating blizzards of gold. Look up through medallions, tumbling, flashing, brilliant yellow against an impossibly blue sky. Suck in lungs full of crisp, clean air, bliss. Heaven without dying. Let time stop now. The real thing could only be a come down. Later, down a ridge, up a knoll, a grandfather white pine spreads at his feet a blanket of his own making. Hold my gun, grandfather. I would lie down on the comforter spread between the humped tops of two of your toes. Thus cozily encased, close my eyes against the stab of the sun. Doze, wake, rise, wander. At night, outside the cabin door, look up. An infinity of diamonds, and strung thickly across the middle of the sky, the Milky Way, that lustrous choker about the throat of the galaxy. At night, while we sleep, the stars come down and glitter on the grass in the morning sun, only to sneak away during the day. When we are not looking, to tease again from lofty perch on morrow night. To the cot in the garret, then, to sleep the sleep of the satisfied soul and dream of cascades of pieces of eight in an azure sea. Grouse forgotten, they were only an excuse.
Mike, you have to concentrate on poetry. I'll say it again.